good afternoon. So earlier today you will have seen the government has agreed in principle to establishing a government inquiry into the Fonterra botulism scare, which we propose to be led by the respected QC Miriam Dean. The reason it is an in principle decision is because the proposed inquiry will be carried out using powers in the Inquiries Bill, which is currently before the House. A final decision cannot be made until the bill is enacted. As signalled at my post-cabinet press conference last week, it's our intention to pass the Inquiries Bill in this House sitting session. Under the Inquiries Bill, a government inquiry reports directly to ministers or a minister and replaces a ministerial inquiry, but will have the necessary powers to call witnesses and evidence. Miriam Dean has more than 30 years legal experience and was appointed a QC in 2004. She specialises in commercial litigation and dispute resolution and has particular expertise in competition and consumer law. I met with Ms Dean earlier today, along with Ministers Guy and Kay, to have an initial discussion around the inquiry. I'm confident she has the right credentials and experience to lead this inquiry. At this stage, we envisage Ms Dean will be supported by two other panel members with a mix of trade, commercial and food safety skills to complement Ms Dean's legal skills. We also intend that at least one panel member will be an international expert. We expect to be able to announce those other panel members and confirm the chair's appointment in the next 2 weeks. The premise of the government's inquiry is to get to the bottom of what caused this issue and also to look at how it was managed and whether any improvements need to be made to the regulatory environment. The government inquiry would be in addition to the Ministry of Primary Industries compliance investigation into the incident, which is currently underway. It's important the government inquiry does not overlap or interfere in MPI's investigation to ensure the integrity of its investigation and any potential court action. Therefore, the focus of the government inquiry will be on two particular areas. The first is how the potential contaminated whey product, protein concentrate entered the New Zealand and international market and how this was subsequently addressed. And the second is on regulatory and best practice requirements in relation to the dairy industry, including the response of regulators and any recognised agency. The first area of focus won't be able to be addressed by the inquiry until after MPI has completed its investigation and any court proceedings have concluded. Today we have released the draft terms of reference for the inquiry, which are subject to change once the inquiry's bill has been passed and the full panel has been appointed. Further advice will come to Cabinet at that time to finalise the terms of reference. The timeline for the government inquiry will also need to be agreed and finalised once the inquiry's bill is enacted. However, at this stage we envisage the inquiry report in two stages, with an interim report covering the regulatory and best practice requirements to report it back within 3 months of the inquiry being notified in the Gazette. The final report would be provided at a date to be specified by Primary Industries Minister Nathan Guy and Food Safety Minister Nikki Kaye as the appointing ministers following the completion of the MPI investigation and any subsequent court proceedings have concluded, as I mentioned earlier. MPI advised last week the investigations of the scope and nature normally take between 3 and 6 months. This time frame would likely extend for a considerable period of court action is required. Just in terms of Westland, earlier today you will also have seen that Westland Milk Products announced a small amount of lactoferrin powder and elevated nitrate levels have been exported to China. I'm advised the elevated nitrate levels pose no food safety risk and the product has been traced and quarantined. None of this product has been made it into the New Zealand market. MPI and MFAT are working closely with the Chinese authorities on this matter. In terms of last Friday and the earthquake, Sydney and the wider Marlborough and Wellington region was rocked, as I'm sure you're aware, by a 6.6 magnitude earthquake. This was a frightening and unnerving experience for many residents in the area where the quakes were most felt, and my thoughts were with them on Friday and over the weekend as they experienced a series of ongoing aftershocks. Though I was not in Wellington on Friday, talking to those who were and watching television coverage that night, I was impressed with how people looked after each other in the aftermath of the quake. There was a real sense of community as people checked on their neighbours and strangers, offered lifts to them so they could get home, particularly those who were left stranded at the railway station when all the trains were cancelled on Friday while the lines were checked. The event is a timely reminder for all New Zealanders to continue to be prepared. People can get more information about being prepared on for an emergency on the getthrough.govt.nz website. And just in terms of my activities this week, I'll be in Wellington tomorrow and Wednesday, obviously, the House is back in session. On Thursday, I'll be in the Wairarapa and Leitrim, and on Friday, I'll be in Wellington for a range of different private appointments. In terms of the House this week, the government will look to progress the GCSB-related legislation amendment bill and the inquiries bill and the resource management reform bill.
How concerned is it that it was a Chinese distributor that picked up this concern with Westfield and that we didn't pick up these nightshade leaders?
This is with Westland.
Yep.
My understanding was that there was initial testing done, and the initial testing didn't show up any particular issues. Subsequently, obviously, there was testing that showed up that there were issues. I mean, I think the way to look at this is the good news is it's not a food safety issue. Clearly, we're operating in a more sensitive environment, so it's particularly unhelpful. All I can say is that the two government agencies, if you like, the Ministry of Primary Industries and the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Trade, have been working very closely with their Chinese counterparts to give them all the information they have and to provide them the scientific research we have in this area.
So are you worried that MPI testing back here didn't pick it up, but the Chinese test picked it?
Well, I don't have any advice on why it was later on picked up. The only thing I thought was that they carried on doing testing in New Zealand. I'd have to check on the Chinese side. But certainly, again, we'll need to look at why it wasn't picked up in the first instance. That, again, sounds odd. But these are living things, I guess. Maybe there's a specific reason.
But the damage to our reputation, because, you know, we have the Chinese media isn't being particularly friendly to us at the moment. And how do you think they're going to receive this?
I think this one would be seen as slightly different. I mean, certainly it's not in the supply chain in terms of consumers buying this product at this point. It's not a food safety issue because the levels are very low, so it doesn't present a threat to Chinese consumers, but it's certainly unhelpful and couldn't really come at a worse time.
But the second case of where it's cleaning?
We need to exactly determine the reason for it, but yes, I mean, look, it's, as I say, at best, not great timing, not helpful.
What have the Chinese said then?
My understanding, just we were on a number of conference calls over the weekend on this issue, and my understanding from MPI is that the Chinese have understood what's going on. They've been working their way through the issue quite carefully. They've been wanting to make sure that, A, there was no product actually that consumers could access, and that they understood exactly all the implications of what went on. But at this stage, they have been looking at it in that category of not as food safety issue, I can't remember the exact term, but there's like a technical breach that sometimes occurs and they see it in that category.
So when did this first come to light and when were
you first? I first knew, I think, Friday morning. Chief Staff, I think, knew on Thursday night. I've got a feeling the ministers responsible knew a couple of days prior to that there may be an issue.
So why did it take till today for it to be
public? Primarily because we were working with the Chinese authorities, and because it wasn't A, in the New Zealand market, there was no risk to New Zealand consumers. B, we don't think there's any risk to any consumer because it's not a food safety issue. And thirdly, our primary concern was working with the Chinese authorities so that they could have all of the information, disseminate that, understand how they would treat that particular issue.
What's your understanding of what caused it?
I just don't think I'd like to offer a view at this point.
It's not. Is it
fertilizer? I just don't have strong enough information to want to comment.
Can you update us on what's happening with the Sri Lanka project?
Well, it's before the courts now. I mean, so essentially, my understanding is that Fonterra are going to, have to go through the process that's involved.
The inquiry won't look, Fonterra won't look at the legislative structure of New Zealand dairy industry.
Yeah.
Does that mean you take it for granted that Fonterra's size doesn't pose a material risk? Or why isn't that question going to be asked? Or will it ever be asked?
Well, I don't think that's really the pertinent question. I mean, at the end of the day, the issue is making sure that New Zealand has the highest food safety standards, the highest and most robust testing regime. And I don't think the issue is whether Fonterra is large or not. I mean, there's effective competition in New Zealand. And in fact, one of the competitors, arguably, Westland, is now one where we're having this discussion about these elevated levels of nitro. So I don't think the issue is really about whether DERA was the right legislation. Now, in the end, if you look at parts B and C of the inquiry, they are going to ask some questions around the response of the regulator and all of those different sort of more generic questions. So let's see what flows out of that, what recommendations make.
Do you think this latest problem is because the Chinese authorities are being more vigilant towards New Zealand's product?
No, I don't think so in this case. My understanding of this case is that there's clearly been a particular issue. It hasn't been picked up in the first instance, but it has been later on, and that ultimately they are elevated levels of nitrate. Now, yes, they are so low, but like TCD was, that they don't present a food safety threat to consumers. But I don't think it's because the Chinese are being fussy or being difficult. It's quite the opposite. They're actually been working, as I understand it, very constructively agencies.
So when did the Chinese authorities decide to put the block on? Was that last week or was that more recently?
On Westland?
Yes.
I think that's done partly as a precautionary issue because essentially there's a thing called an OMA, which is in these particular, basically in relation to this lactoferrin product, in which there were four batches, two from Westland and ultimately two from Tatua, although it was all sourced originally from Westland. In relation to those.
So was that in place last week when the Chinese authorities were first dealing with ministers, or is that
gone? You'd have to check with MPI at the same time, but it'll be at the point at which we advised that there was a problem, I think.
Has this been an issue in the past? Claims has been picked up before and the public has
been done
over?
I can't answer that question, but I certainly haven't been getting advice if that's been the case.
How damaging is this to our reputation? I mean, we've now had, as you said, DCD. We're picking up traces of chemicals in our milk products.
Well, at one level it shows that we have very high levels of testing and that testing is becoming very sophisticated. Secondly, what is true is that we communicate with any international regulator as soon as we have information and try and make sure they are fully informed. So my understanding is that the Chinese authorities have been working very constructively us over the course of the weekend, just trying to understand exactly the extent of the issue, seeking reassurance about what risks there are, if any, and have been asking a series of questions that we've been providing the answers for. So this is a bit different to something splashed over across the front page of the paper, which was the case when you had the issue very recently with Fonterra. So these are different issues. And actually from time to time, these kinds of issues do occur. So in terms of, because it's not a food safety issue, you will from time to time get a company having an issue.
Well, I come back to the point at the start, which is that our testing didn't pick this up. That's the damaging bit, isn't it?
No, I agree, but I just don't know exactly why that is or whether it's something that shows up slightly later on or I don't know.
Generally, have you got the way officials have responded to this one?
Yes, in terms of MPI, everything I know so far, they've acted swiftly, they've tried to get ministers involved. Try to get this good information. I mean, because these are, as we can see, ingredients being manufactured, it's a very complex supply chain. It's not simple. If you take the Fonterra example, that was 38 tonnes of whey, but I think in broad terms it produced over 1,000 tonnes of product, in multiple different markets with lots of different potential products. So these things are never simple for everybody. But we do have good systems. But I mean, again, that's part of the inquiry is to go away and ask the question about our tracking and tracing systems, what's happening, the whole overall support of the dairy industry.
So, Prime Minister, have you consulted with the opposition about the passage of this bill, Agent?
Yes, they have. In my sense, they're supportive. That's Labour, yes, the opposition, yeah.
What about Miners' Party? It's not going under urgency, though, is it?
No, I don't think so. I need to check that, actually.
Is there going to be an SOP?
Yes, there will be an SOP for inquiries.
And what's going to be in the SOP?
I'll leave them spelled out for you, but there's a few bits and pieces. There's some technical points around, I think the original legislation says minister and not ministers, and there's a number of things like that.
Was there any capacity within any of these inquiries to look at other determinations, or are they sort of not serious enough to be kind of folded into the cocktail?
Yeah, no, I don't think we're going to sort of mix these things outside of that parts B and C, look at the broader dairy industry, but I don't think anyone's arguing that this particular issue at Westland should be sort of bound into part A, if you like, of the inquiry.
Have you had any late discussions with Winston Peters regarding the GCSP bill? Do you expect him to put forward any SOPs that you might support?
No. I mean, look, we've on numerous occasions actually sort of reached out there, but you know, to no avail.
Prime Minister, this afternoon or this evening in Auckland, there's going to be a large number of people in the gathering at the town hall to talk about the GCSP bill and to talk about the opposition to it. Do you have anything to say to those people?
Oh, just that, you know, I think they can take great confidence that legislation is both necessary. It's well balanced. It's a tidy up of the previous legislation that Labor passed. And I think there will always be a point where, you know, privacy intersects with national security. But I think we've got that point about right.
Prime Minister, at the National Party conference, Judith Collins raised suggested that there'd been some cooperation between OFCAMS or between the child abuse teams and the GCSB around. Are you aware of what she was referring to?
I wasn't there when she said that. You need to take it up with her.
So she said it on television. I mean, one of the things that that some people have criticised the passage of this bill and the way that it's being passed around is that the police haven't given any evidence of their use of the GCSB, and there's no clarity on what use the GCSB has made, or the police has made of the GCSB.
Well, if you look at the 88 individuals in the 50 plus something cases...
They're all SIS cases, they're not police cases.
No, that's not right. Of the 88 individuals in the 50 plus something cases in the GC, in the Rebecca Kitteridge report, the bulk of them were SIS, but some were police, I think, and some were defence.
So how often has there been cooperation between the police and the GCSB to your knowledge?
I don't get that.
So, Prime Minister, one of the issues that the public...
I've got to tell you guys, I've got 30 minutes. I'm not answering Alistair's questions in totality. It's your time.
Can I ask quickly about the Section 8A cyber function?
Yep.
What in the law, if anything, actually protects New Zealanders from having their email metadata or content looked at in the process of the GCSB using Section 8A?
Okay, so Section 8A... number part B or part 2 says that without limiting the paragraph A, to do everything that is necessary or desirable to protect the security and integrity of communications and information infrastructures. So it's about the protection of information, not about going into information. Then if you go to section 15A, so basically 8A sets up a function which is protection. 15A, which is the warrant, says it has to apply to a function. And then if you look at 15C, that backs that up. So it's not possible, on the advice I've had, as a result of this, to necessarily go into all of the content. And what we've made quite clear is that the warrants that we will be issuing, assuming one is even issued at the request of a private company for cyber security, be about protection of information, not about accessing content as it relates to New Zealanders.
So why can't you legislate to add those protections in terms of looking at the actual content of people's emails?
Because it gets really, really technical, but essentially the way to think through this is that if there was a private company in New Zealand and that company, with the agreement of the GCSB, decided that we would provide cyber security protection, in my view, and that's the advice I've had from the lawyers, is that 8A, 15A and 15C stop the ability to look at content. That's certainly the way the warrants will be signed in relation to that.
Do they stop the ability to look at metadata?
Metadata, no, not necessarily, but content, yes. Depending on what definition you have of metadata, because that, of course, it's extremely broad. It may not be in the context that you would think of metadata, the way we did with Peter Dunn, which was very specific, but at a very, very technical, very broad definition of metadata, they can look at metadata.
But why are they ambiguous? Isn't that the whole problem? That's the whole problem with
No, but this is the point, though, is that if there was, basically what happens is if we ultimately, through looking at all of that, filtered out, decided we did want to look at the content, we would probably use 8B and look at the foreign powers, because these are foreign cyber security attacks upon New Zealand. But where it gets really technical is it's not physically impossible to clone a New Zealand system and to use that to attack you. Now, in that instance, we would demand that they came back to us and issued yet another warrant, because with the agreement of that individual. So it's not physically possible. But the provisions under cyber security are not about accessing content. They are about protecting content.
And will there be, when there's the oversight that is put in place, will the oversight provisions enable us to know whether that happened or not?
Correct, yes, because what happens is, as we've agreed, at the ISC, every year there'll be a summary of the warrants that were signed, not the individual warrant, but the number of warrants in a category. And on that committee sits the Leader of the Opposition and his or her nominee, plus obviously government members. And at that committee, someone will be able to ask the very obvious question. So when it comes to cyber security, have any warrants been issued that sought to look at content for New Zealanders?
Ought the GCSB to have any responsibility to protect us from surveillance of our data by American authorities or by British authorities or by Australian authorities using PRISM and ex-Keysport and so forth?
Well, I'm not going to go into the overall bits of it because it's technically possible, but what I'd say to you is that we are trying to protect, and we have quite good reason to want to do that, foreign cyber attacks on New Zealand infrastructure. So in fact, if we were to offer the service to the companies, which is what's really proposed in the legislation, I'd be amazed if those companies didn't want to do that. And the basic reason being that essentially, by offering, as I explained on Campbell Live, the equivalent of a Norton antivirus, what we're actually offering is a service which is light years above that, so because we have the understanding and the capability to do that.
You misunderstood my question. My question is, New Zealanders' data, companies in New Zealand who use Google Documents and Google Mail and anything to do with Google, the US government has access to their private files. So do US contractors working for the NSA. Does the GCSB have a responsibility to protect New Zealanders from that threat?
Well, we have the responsibility to protect New Zealanders if we choose to, because this would be under warrant, because we chose to do so and the company agreed for us to do so, against credible threats. You can decide whether you think that's a threat, and I can offer my own view of whether I think it's a threat. That might be different.
So what is your view? What is your view on whether that's a threat?
Well, I'm not really interested in going there, because that's a silly question.
To access metadata, GCSB will require a warrant from you.
Yeah, they require a warrant. So what happens is, under the provisions of Section 8A for cyber security, that's warranted behaviour, and that's why 15A applies. Right? So they'll have to go along, let's take a hypothetical example, and say, here's Company A, and for whatever reason, Company A is of national significance with either information or IP, which we believe needs to be protected. They have to get a warrant. GCSB would have to get a warrant to assist them. And that warrant would have to be signed by the Commissioner and by myself with oversight from the Inspector. And that's because of a number of reasons, but one of them is because in the very broadest sense of the word, there's metadata there. But it's, without going into the finer details of it, it's not metadata like Peter Dunn's definition of metadata. But in the purest sense of the word, it's metadata.
And you can speak in the third reader.
Yes.
Why?
We'll be at the sort of finishing flag, so I might as well take the opportunity that I had to be here. So, as I said to you, because you asked me on a few occasions whether I'd be giving a particular speech, I might as well take the opportunity because I'm here to read it in. Anyone could read it into the record, but yes, we will, and we'll be spelling out all the things that we've said, because any judge, if this was ever tested in court, will use the hands up from a third reading speech to actually look at what the intent of Parliament was. And so I want to put on the record what my intentions are in relation to those warrants, what my belief is around these exemptions and how cybersecurity applies, and also our understanding of what the law is doing.
So under this law, Prime Minister, when it becomes law, can you rule out that sort of spying on the data of everyday New Zealanders, like what we've seen in the States? Will this law prevent that happening? Basically, in layman's terms, will this prevent the GCSB from doing an NSA?
Well, you couldn't mean anything by that. But if the question you are asking is, will there be wholesale surveillance of people's emails, where they receive those emails from, and what the content of these emails, I can categorically rule that out. But effectively, if we were providing cyber security protection over an entity for which there was a warrant, XYZ company, it essentially flows through a filter, and as it flows through that filter, it doesn't record for anything other than 1/100 of a second. It's looking for the viruses which are coming into the system. It's not looking at the content, it's not looking at who sent the email, it's simply looking for the viruses. And we don't record, or under that scenario, we wouldn't record where the emails came from, you know, who got them, any of that sort of stuff. It's just literally like pouring water through our filter. And if you go straight through the filter, nothing's recorded. But for, you know, a nanosecond, it, you know, technically, it's going through that filter. And under the very broadest definition of metadata, a lawyer will tell you that's metadata.
Prime Minister, numerous legal jurists have informed us publicly that they disagree with you wholeheartedly about that, that you are taking broad powers which allow you to invade privacy at a wholesale level. And you're saying that all those people are wrong.
Correct.
On top of that, we also have the situation that two investigations that you were responsible for.
Can I just ask you, is this a question? But
this is a question.
Okay, because I'll tell you what.
This is a question.
I'll give you the answer.
Well, you know, you haven't heard the question yet.
No, I don't know what the question is.
You can just interrupt like you did John Campbell, or I can ask the question.
Thanks very much, guys.